Welcome back to the ISSB Implementation Insights podcast. I'm Sarah McFerrin, ISSB technical staff, and with me are my co-host, Greg Bartholomew, who leads the I4S S1 and S2 implementation team, and ISSB Vice Chair, Sue Lloyd. Today, we're going to cover four key topics. First, we'll share an update on recently published and upcoming educational materials. Then we'll go into a recap of the March 2026 TIG meeting, which is our transition implementation group, followed by some thoughts and comments about the new TIG webpage and the resources that can be found there. And last, we'll talk about the greenhouse gas protocol and what the revision process means for preparers. With that, I'll hand off to Greg to kick off the first topic, the educational material update.
Thank you, Sarah. So the first topic is on our education materials and wanted to highlight our most recently published education material, which is a webcast and an accompanying fact sheet on the topic of climate resilience and climate-related scenario analysis requirements in IFRS S2. And the focus of this webcast is on a commonly flagged challenging area in IFRS S2, which is, about scenario analysis. But the core message is that, IFRS S2 requires entities to disclose information that enables investors to understand the resilience of its strategy and business model to climate-related changes, developments, and uncertainties, that is, its climate resilience. And so we wanted to make it clear that, the requirements about scenario analysis are all in the context of disclosing information about climate resilience, because S2 requires a company to use scenario analysis to inform the assessment of climate resilience. And the purpose of those disclosures is to help investors understand the implications of the assessment on its strategy and business model, including the entity's capacity to adjust or adapt to the effects identified through the assessment. One thing that we really wanted to emphasize in the resources is that a company is able to select a proportionate approach to its scenario analysis that's commensurate with its circumstances. So this means that the approach to scenario analysis considers the company's exposure to climate-related risk and opportunities, as well as the skills, capabilities, and resources that are available to the company. IFRS S2 does not prescribe a specific methodology or require the use of a particular number or set of scenarios. It just requires that the approach that the company uses for scenario analysis be commensurate with its circumstances and enable it to consider all reasonable and supportable information available to it without undue cost and effort. So this means that a qualitative approach, a quantitative approach, or a combination of approaches can all be appropriate under S2. So a company with a lower exposure to climate-related risk and opportunities and or lower skills, capabilities, and resources might initially apply a simpler, more qualitative or qualitative-only approach, and then over time evolve to a more advanced approach as it increases its skills, capabilities, and resources. The webcast includes a couple helpful illustrative examples demonstrating how two very different companies, one large energy company and a mid-sized consumer goods company, might arrive at quite different but equally valid approaches to scenario analysis. So what this means is that, companies applying very different approaches to scenario analysis can still meet the requirements of S2.
Yeah, I think that's a really good webcast for people to look at, because I think it does a good job of reinforcing that there's no sort of one size fits all requirement in S2. It really is designed so that it's possible for entities of all sorts of sizes from different sectors and different geographies around the world to be able to apply the standard. So it means that smaller entities or those that are earlier in implementing climate reporting and learning about scenario analysis don't need to replicate the sophistication that a larger financial institution, for example, might undertake when it comes to modeling scenarios and thinking about their resilience. And what I hope the message in that webcast is that it really is okay for those with those entities with more limited experience and resourcing to do something simpler. But there's also the opportunity to improve over time. And that's what we really sought to achieve with the approach in IFRS S2, to make it possible for everybody to get started and learn by doing, seems to be a popular phrase that people use these days. And I think the key question to keep coming back to for those who are looking at these requirements and thinking about, okay, what should I do and what approach is going to be appropriate is, does the approach that I take result in investors getting useful information about the resilience of the strategy and the resilience of my business model to climate-related risks and opportunities? And ultimately, am I giving them confidence that those in the organization responsible for looking after the strategy and the direction of the business are asking the right questions and thinking about the right things to enable them to manage risks and to run the business well, given what it's exposed to? That's what this is all about. So I really hope that people find the webcast and the slides and the accompanying fact sheet are useful. I think they're a great starting point, even just looking at the fact sheet, if you don't have time to watch the recorded webcast. But I really do encourage everybody, preparers, auditors, advisors, to watch the full webcast when you can, because I think there's a lot of really practical information there.
Thanks, Sue. The next item to flag related to education materials is an item that we have in the pipeline and that we're planning to update our existing education materials on the GHG emissions disclosure requirements in IFRS S2. If you recall, we published this material last year, and it's organized as a series of questions and answers about the GHG emissions disclosure requirements in S2. GHG emissions are a very important element of S2, and we continue to receive questions on the topic. And because of the question and answer format of the materials, it's well suited to be refreshed with new questions as they arise. So the kind of impetus for this particular update is, as you'll recall, last year we responded to market feedback by making targeted amendments to certain GHG emissions requirements in S2. And so we'll be updating these materials to help support the understanding of some of the recent amendments to IFRS S2. So more details to come on timing and exact scope of the changes. So you watch this space. And then as a final note on the topic of education, I wanted to highlight that you can now access our suite of education materials that we've produced over the last couple of years on the refreshed IFRS resources page on our Knowledge Hub. The materials are organized across four categories. So those materials relating to key concepts and mechanisms in the ISSB standards, the materials related solely to climate-related disclosures under S2, materials on the topic of industry-specific information for investors, and the materials covering alignment with other reporting frameworks. The site includes a short description of each material, along with links to the material, translated versions, and related resources. And we really hope that this will be a helpful way for people to navigate the suite of resources that are available to support application and implementation of our standards. We'll include a direct link to the refresh page in the episode notes as well.
Thanks, Greg, for that update on the education topic. Let's move on to our next topic, which is the Transition Implementation Group, or the TIG. And let's start with a quick reminder of what the TIG is, which is a public forum bringing together experts that are involved in implementing sustainability reporting. And that group of experts includes preparers and insurance providers that discusses implementation questions arising from applying IFRS S1 and IFRS S2. The TIG is a really important mechanism for surfacing real-world questions and helps the ISSB understand where additional guidance may be needed. Most recently, the TIG met on the 26th of March, 2026, and the TIG meeting summary was published the following month in April. So the topic of discussion at this last meeting was biogenic emissions and IFRS S2. The question specifically that was addressed in the paper and in the TIG discussions was, do GHG emissions disclosure requirements in IFRS S2 apply to biogenic emissions? This question arose because under the Greenhouse Gas Protocol Corporate Standard, which is referenced in IFRS S2, carbon dioxide from burning biomass and biofuels, or so-called biogenic emissions, must be reported separately from scopes 1, 2, and 3. The staff view presented in the TIG paper stated that biogenic emissions are GHG emissions. They released greenhouse gases as defined in IFRS S2, and so the disclosure requirements in IFRS S2 apply to biogenic emissions. and they fall within Scope 1, Scope 2, and Scope 3 as applicable. The rationale for this staff view, as included in the staff paper, said that IFRS S2 references the Greenhouse Gas Protocol corporate standard for measurement. IFRS S2 itself does not explicitly require biogenic emissions to be disclosed separately from the scopes. And importantly, IFRS S2 requires an entity to apply the requirements in the Greenhouse Gas Protocol corporate standard only to the extent that they do not conflict with the requirements in IFRS S2. Sue, maybe you could talk about what the TIG members said in the discussion.
Sure. So I think it was an interesting discussion, and it's worth looking at the paper and listening to the meeting for those who've got a particular interest in the topic. But my overall takeaway was that TIC members expressed agreement with the staff view that the GHG emissions disclosure requirements in IFRS S2 apply to biogenic emissions. So they are, you know, within the scope of the standard, if you like, to provide information about. And that's because biogenic emissions are GHG emissions as defined, because they release greenhouse gases, which is what the definition in IFRS S2 refers to. And it is definitely the case, which is where the difference arises with the greenhouse gas protocol, that S2 isn't specific in its requirements about how to disclose biogenic emissions. And they are different in nature to other greenhouse gas emissions because of the type of energy that's used in their generation. And because of that, TIG members pointed out the importance of really clearly labeling GHG emissions disclosures so that somebody reading those disclosures is really clear about where biogenic emissions are included within the disclosures that an entity provides when that's material information. And it can be material because of the difference in the nature of the emissions. And because, for an example, an entity may have a particular strategy or targets that relate to these emissions. And also, I think more basically, if you're going to make comparisons between companies, knowing where they're included, if they matter for that entity, just supports comparability. Now, one of the specific things that came up, which is, you know, often what people are interested in, is what this means for interoperability with the European standards, ESRS. And that's because ESRS, like the GHG protocol, does explicitly require that biogenic emissions be disclosed separately from other greenhouse gas emissions within Scope 1, 2, and 3. And TIG members noted that that means in practice that if an entity is applying both the ISSB standards and the European standards ESRS, they need to think carefully about how to apply and disclose the information in a way that enables both sets of requirements to be met. And the TIG members talked about some practical approaches that might facilitate that. So, for example, how you might present a table with separate line items for each framework and use biogenic emissions as essentially a reconciling item so that it's really clear how it's included and you can meet both sets of requirements. So some practical suggestions, I think, from the TIG members.
Right. And in addition to those comments about clear labeling and interoperability, TIG members pointed out aspects of IFRS S2 that could result in material information being provided about biogenic emissions. So one point was TIG members emphasized the importance of the aggregation and disaggregation requirements in IFRS S2 as a way to provide information about biogenic emissions separately and to ensure that material information is not obscured. So, for example, an entity where the use of bioenergy is an important part of its strategic response to climate-related risks and opportunities may need to separately identify biogenic emissions in their disclosures. And then in terms of qualitative information, TIG members also discussed the application of other requirements in IFRS S2 that might result in information about an entity's biogenic emissions. And those include disclosures about climate transition plans, disclosure about strategy for managing climate-related risks and opportunities, and progress against GHG emissions targets. For example, disclosing whether targets include or exclude biogenic emissions. For the full meeting summary and the recording, visit ifrs.org, and we will include a link to this in the episode notes. So with that, we can move on to our next topic, which also happens to be about TIG. If you haven't already heard the exciting news, on the 29th of April, 2026, the IFRS Foundation announced a new resource on the TIG section of ifrs.org. Previously, it wasn't always easy to access information about questions submitted to the TIG mailbox that didn't lead to a standalone TIG paper and TIG discussion, but for which the ISSB technical staff provided responses with references to the standards. And so we have a new page entitled Responses to Questions Submitted to the TIG that brings together all those responses in one accessible location. This page, along with the TIG resources page, includes a link to the submissions log where users can see the full list of questions that have been submitted to the TIG. The questions on this new webpage are organized by submission number, and for any questions in the submissions log that are not seen on this new webpage, the submission log has a reference to the associated agenda paper and TIG summary where the question was addressed. This webpage was created to really just make sure that stakeholders can easily find resources that support implementation, such as TIG resources, but also educational material. And watch out for more announcements about how to more easily access the collection of materials that have been developed over the last couple of years.
Yeah, one thing to highlight to make sure that listeners are aware of is that the responses on this page reflect the ISSB standards at the time that the questions were reported to the TIG and analyzed by the staff. So this means any questions that came in and were analyzed before December 2025 reflect IFRS S2 prior to the amendments that we made in relation to GHG emissions requirements. So for anything GHG related, best to refer to the amended version of IFRS S2 for the most up-to-date requirements. And then, yeah, just note that this resource will continue to be updated over time as more questions are submitted. And we'll also provide a link to this new webpage in the episode notes.
Great. Thanks for noting that caveat there, Greg. With that, our final topic today is one that we know is on the minds of many preparers, the Greenhouse Gas Protocol. So turning back to Greg, could you talk about what the ongoing revision process means for those who are already applying IFRS S2 and perhaps those that will be starting that journey soon?
Sure. Yeah. So I think as many listeners are aware, the GHG Protocol is in the process of revising its corporate suite of standards and guidance. We noted in our last podcast at the beginning of the year that, you know, working with the GHG protocol under the terms of the Memorandum of Understanding would be a key area of focus for us in 2026. Most recently, the GHG protocol concluded a public consultation on proposed revisions to its Scope 2 guidance earlier this year. And then in March, the protocol launched a 60-day public request for information on its actions and market instruments work stream. More consultations related to the revisions are expected to follow. So I think ISSB stakeholders may be watching this closely and asking, you know, what does this mean for me? So, Sue, do you want to try and answer that question?
Sure, I'll give it my best shot. So I think my main message is, if you're worried, don't worry. So firstly, nothing that comes out of the GHG protocol revision process takes immediate effect from an IFRS S2 perspective. So it's not imminent. And secondly, there will be no effect on IFRS S2 application without you first having the opportunity to comment. That's the sort of short answer. But in more detail, as was mentioned, IFRS S2 contains a specific reference to the protocol. So in particular, entities have to measure their greenhouse gas emissions subject to jurisdictional exceptions using the Greenhouse Gas Protocol Corporate Accounting and Reporting Standard 2004. And so we were really specific to reference the 2004 version of the standard. And that's the reference in the standard as it stands today. Now, so what that means is that any changes made to the GHG protocol can't affect IFRS S2 without us taking action to propose amendments to IFRS S2. So any proposed amendments to the GHG-related requirements in IFRS S2 would have to meet certain criteria for the ISSB to proposing an update to reflect the change. And if that criteria would met, we'd follow our own due process. So that means that before anything happens, the ISSB would discuss the amendments that the GHG protocol is proposing, talk about the consequences of those amendments for those using our standards in order to determine whether we agree with that, and on the basis of that, decide whether to propose any amendments to IFRSS 2 to update our references to the GHG materials, GHG protocol materials, sorry. And that then always, as is in accordance with our due process, would mean that we have to undertake a public consultation by issuing an exposure draft, which has a default of 120 days. You'd be able to send us comment letters, and then we'd need to re-deliberate the proposals based on the feedback that we receive, and then ultimately make a final decision by the ISSB. So hopefully all of that will enable you to see that you just should continue to apply the 2004 corporate standard with confidence at the moment as being what you need to focus on to apply IFRSS 2. And any changes, only in the future and are subject to you having a chance to comment.
Okay, so quite a few steps are involved in that process is what I took from that. So Greg, can you also clarify which of the GHG protocol materials are and are not captured in IFRSS 2's references?
Yeah, sure. So S2 references two specific GHG protocol standards. As Sue mentioned, the 2004 corporate standard for purposes of measurement, and then the 2011 corporate value chain standard for purposes of definition of the categories of scope 3 emissions. So these are the two specific standards that are referenced, and they are referenced for specific purposes. Nothing outside of those materials are explicitly referenced nor required by S2 for measuring and disclosing information about GHG emissions. Thus, preparers should not feel that they're explicitly required to apply the GHG protocol standards or guidance beyond what is specifically referenced in S2. However, these other materials are not prohibited from being used, and they may serve as a helpful source of guidance when applying and meeting the requirements in ISSB standards. Importantly, though, the requirements within the GHG protocol standards can only be applied to the extent that they do not conflict with the requirements in ISSB standards.
Yeah, so hopefully this provides clarity about the scope of the reference of the GHG protocol standards in IFRSS 2 and the fact that any changes to those standards don't have any immediate effect on the application of IFRSS 2. But it does mean, I'd have to say, that it means it's really important that listeners keep an eye on the GHG protocol's work as well as ours, I'm afraid, because it's really important that ISSB stakeholders engage with and respond to the GHG protocol's own public consultation, as well as ultimately responding to any changes we might propose as a consequence of their work. And that's really helpful both for us and for the GHG protocol, because it not only will inform their revisions, it also helps us to get an early signal of what we need to think about when we consider whether and how to make any amendments to the references we have to the GHG protocol standards in IFRSS 2 in the future. So we'll continue to monitor the GHG protocol developments really closely and aim to keep our stakeholders informed so that you can help us and help them as well.
Thanks, Sue. I know our listeners will be very interested to hear about any developments in this area. All right. Well, thank you both for sharing these updates and insights. As a reminder to listeners, all of the resources that we've mentioned today are available at ifrs.org, and links are also included in the episode notes. As always, implementation questions can be submitted via the TIG submission process, a link to which is also included in the episode notes. Thank you, Greg and Sue, for joining, and thanks to the listeners. We'll be back with the next edition of Implementation Insights in due course.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please take the time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player. Please contact us on communications@ifrs.org with any questions, comments, or suggestions. You can also sign up for email alerts on our website, ifrs.org, or find us on social media.